The following presentation was made available by Inspiration Express as part of the daily Kitzur Shulchan Aruch calendar program. There are many more free lectures and resources available at www.kitzur365.org. Today's lecture is given by Rabbi Yoav Drian.
This is Siman Tzadi Ches, Part 3, Seifim Yud Tes through Lamed. Sif Yud Tes. We have been speaking about the permissibility of slaughtering animals on Yom Tov, that despite the fact that slaughtering is one of the 39 melachos, nonetheless, one is allowed to because of the allowance of ochel nefesh. One is permitted to perform several melachos if they will result, or if they are necessary, for the immediate consumption or for the immediate use of Yom Tov. Sif Yud Tes. Shachat Of V'nimtza Trefa. One slaughtered a bird, a fowl, a chicken, or some such, and found that it was a trefa, that it was an animal that is not kosher. Obviously, it was of a kosher species, that's why you slaughtered it, but rather, a trefa is an animal that will not live out the year, has some sort of internal defect, and is definitely not permitted. So let's say you did such a thing, meaning you had a fine plump chicken ready to be shechted for your Yom Tov feast, and when you slaughtered it, you found that it was a trefa. Asur letaltalo, kmosh ar mukta. Says the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, it is forbidden to move it, just like all mukta. Meaning, until you found that it was a trefa, then it was potentially going to be your Yom Tov feast, it was mutter. It's mutter to carry, mutter to deal with, because one is preparing it for a Yom Tov. However, in the event that it becomes a trefa, you found out that it was a trefa actually all along, that's it. There's nothing more you can do with it, because you certainly can't consume it, and so now you may not do anything with it on Yom Tov, rather it is mukta. Aval, however, im shachat behema v'nimtzeis trefa, but if you slaughtered an animal, right, a larger animal like a goat or a cow, and you find that is a trefa, mutter lehatznia b'makom shelo tiskalkel. It is permissible to hide it away or to put it away in a place where it will not go bad. Ve'im iyev shalahatznia, and if one has no such place, if it is impossible to put it aside, shelo tiskalkel, in a place where it will not go bad, mutter lemachra legoy. One may sell it to a non-Jew, but often in such a manner as shelo yiktzotz damim velo yishkol, that you do not, set out the price, meaning that you don't set a price, and you do not weigh the animal. Ve'ulai gam be'avados petumos, and perhaps also in fattened geese, the shchiach behu trefos, because it is common to find trefos in those, yesh lehakel. There is also the permissibility of being lenient. The difference that he makes between chickens or other fowl and animals is that large animals carry a much larger price tag. It's a much more significant financial outlay, and as such, Chazal were sensitive to the financial realities of a person when they instituted the laws of mukta, meaning mukta is a rabbinic decree, and as such, one can, so to speak, take into account several things. One of these considerations is what's called hefsed merube, great loss. In cases of hefsed merube, it is sometimes permissible to be lenient. Obviously, this is not a decision that one makes on their own, but a halachic authority may very well take this into account, and this is exactly what's happening here in Sif Yud Tes. That if, let's say, one slaughtered a large animal and found it to be a trefa, so one does not have to leave it, and just sort of let it rot and let it go bad, but rather one can put it away, right? Nowadays with refrigeration, it's fairly simple, right? You just sort of string it up in the meat locker and deal with it on Motzei Yom Tov. But in the case where, even that is not available, so one can immediately just sort of hand it off to a non-Jew, but you may not treat it as business as usual. You sort of have to leave all the details till later. And the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch says that it's possible also this will be the case with fattened geese, because apparently there is a high incidence of treifa with geese. Sif Chaf. Ein lishchot behema b'yom tov ela tzarech gadol. One should not slaughter a large animal on Yom Tov unless there is a great need. V'asur limkor es habasar b'mishkal v'lo b'ktisas damim. And it is forbidden to sell the meat by weight, and also it is forbidden to sell it with definitive pricing, with, you know, actual decided pricing. Ela nosem al ezer chalek stam. Rather, you just sort of give out whatever part, whatever piece happens to go, and la'achar Yom Tov yishamlo, and then after Yom Tov, the payment happens. Right? This is probably another reason why the slaughtering of an animal is a big deal. It's almost impossible for an animal to be slaughtered and to be consumed by one party. Meaning, unless you're slaughtering for 200 people, usually people in their own private feasts don't need an entire animal. So if one is freshly slaughtered, so basically, you know, parts get sold. Parts get sold, they go this way, that way. And as such, what they need to do is they need to go and usually they are sold by weight. However, on Yom Tov, one may not do that. So therefore, the parts, you know, should just sort of be given out, and all details should be worked out after Yom Tov. Se'if Chav Aleph. Hashochet Behema Tov Zlelo Livdok Es Hareya Ad La'achar She'afshed Es Ha'or. And now the Kiddush Shulchan Aruch is giving us advice, and he says, if one slaughters an animal, it is good not to check the lungs until after the animal is skinned. Until after Yafshit means to take off, until the animal is skinned. Why is this the case? Key, because in Yivdok, if one checks the lungs, Vitimase Trefa, and found that the animal is a Trefa, Asur Lahafshita, it is forbidden to skin it. Right? Now, just a tiny bit of background on the concept of treifa. We spoke already that it means that an animal has an internal defect and won't live out the year. Most common defect, or the most common thing to check for, is that the lungs of the animal were in good functioning order, and this is done usually by removing the lungs and blowing them up. You blow them up like a balloon, sort of. And then, you know, trained hands are run all over the lungs to see if there are certain growths or if there are any holes there. Now, lungs that are completely smooth and therefore, you know, are in good functioning order were always given the appellation as smooth lungs, or in Yiddish, glatt. This is where the term glatt kosher comes from. Glatt means smooth, and it is referring to the smoothness of the lungs, meaning that the animal was in good health, as is evidenced by its smooth and functioning lungs. This being the case, so the Kiddush Shulchan Aruch gives us the advice, says, listen, if you slaughter an animal, now if you inflate the lungs, if you check the lungs and you find that the animal was a treifa, so now you're in a quandary because you have issues of mukta to deal with. So you can sort of play it and intentionally put off checking the lungs until after you skin it. Because so long as you haven't checked the lungs, for all you know, the animal is kosher, and then everything you're doing is permissible because you're intending to consume the animal on Yom Tov. That's fine. Now, fast forward, check the lungs. Oh, no, it's a treifa. Well, by then, the animal is already skinned, and it is much easier to deal with. But if you check the lungs first, before the animal is skinned, and you find that it's a treifa, then the animal becomes mukta, and then you may not skin it. The Kiddush Shulchan Aruch continues, Mutar l'tatal sa'or mibehema. One may move the skin or the hide from an animal, sheshachta hayom, that was slaughtered today, kedei latznia, in order to put it aside. Avalo l'shatcha gabi yesedos, but not in order to lay it out on stakes, right? The hide was dried, and this was usually done by stretching it out on stakes or you know, sticks. That is not permissible. One may not go and set that out on Yom Tov. Ushar oros and other hides, asurim mitiltul. They are forbidden to carry. They are mukta, because a hide which is in the middle of being worked is obviously mukta. There's nothing you can do with it on Yom Tov, and therefore it is mukta. However, the hide from an animal that you have just recently slaughtered and skinned, obviously you're allowed, right? If you're allowed to slaughter the animal, then you're allowed to deal with the hide until you may put it aside. V'chein ha-notzos me'ov, and also feathers from a bird, sheshachto hayom, that was slaughtered today, mutar le'tazlan le'atznian, one may carry them and put them aside, al ha'shar notzos asur le'tazlan. But other feathers are forbidden to be carried, meaning normally the feathers were plucked and saved to make all sorts of, you know, down items. The ones that are still, like, in the feather basket, so to speak, waiting to be sewn up into a blanket or a pillow or something, those are forbidden, because those are muktzah. But obviously, the feathers that you have plucked from an animal that you have slaughtered today, those are permissible, because, as we have spoken, if the animal itself is permissible, then all things that you're doing with the animal are also subsequently permissible. Chaf beis. Mutar limloach basar. It is permissible to salt your meat. Lehachshiro midamo, in order to kosher the meat from the absorbed blood. Afilu haya efshar l'malcho me'atmo, even if it was possible to salt it yesterday, right? This is the Kitzchuk Narach says this because, as we know, one may only do malachos for ochel nefesh that could not have been done before Yom Tov, or could not have been done as well. But as far as salting is concerned, the Kitzchuk Narach says that it's fine. You may salt meat even if you could have salted it yesterday. Obviously, you did not slaughter it today, but rather perhaps it was slaughtered at some point on Erev Yom Tov. And even though you could have salted it yesterday, you may salt it on Yom Tov. V'davka, however, one must be certain, im yesh bo l'tzorech hayom, that it is necessary for Yom Tov itself. V'im le'yesh lo basar yoter, and if you have more meat, v'hu mityarei, and one is suspicious, or one is worried, shelo yitkakel, that it shouldn't get ruined, that it shouldn't spoil, muter limloach hakol be'yachar, afilu haba, it is permissible to salt all of it together, even a lot, gam ma'shein otzorchem, even that which you don't need for today, zehakol chadat tirchehi, because it is all one bother, or should I say, one effort, right? That which a person has to make sure to do on Yom Tov is you're supposed to maintain a sort of status quo in terms of the effort that you put in. Meaning, one is allowed to slaughter. One is allowed to skin the animal and prepare it and you know, pluck it and so on and so forth. But that's only the case if you're going to consume it. Now, obviously, I cannot prepare five times what I need in planning on having leftovers for the coming week or weeks. But in terms of the salting of the meat, specifically this segment of your preparations, the Kitzchuk Narach says, listen, salting the meat is one category of effort. And so it doesn't matter if you're salting a little or salting a lot. And so if you don't need to, if you have refrigeration or you have whatever, you know, means you have, and you don't need to salt the meat right away, then you should not salt anything that you do not need for Yom Tov itself, but rather you should wait on it. However, if you don't have a way to keep the meat fresh, or you don't have a way to preserve it, and if you don't salt it today, you are worried that it's going to go bad, then it is permissible. One may go and salt even the meat you don't need, and it is not called extra effort on Yom Tov, because the Kitchen Law says, "Akol chada tirchei," it's all considered one effort. Aval, however, basar shekvar nimlach midamo, but meat that has already been salted from its blood, v'chein dagim, and also fish, shaya asher l'malcham v'erev yandav, that fish that could have been salted on erev yandav, which obviously the salting fish is not a kashering issue, because fish blood is not prohibited, but rather it's just a culinary issue, asher l'malcham v'yandav, that is forbidden to salt on yandav, because it is considered excessive preparation, it is considered that one is doing too much effort there. Chaf Gimel. Now we're sort of moving from slaughtering and preparing raw meats to other aspects of cooking or baking. And here we go. Chaf Gimel. K'she'ose ma'ase ofe b'yom tov. When one bakes on Yom Tov, you may not make shapes using a form or like a cookie cutter, obeyad, or to actually make the shapes with your hand. La'asos mina isa, to make from the dough, eze tziyurim, to make shapes. Ke'ofos v'chadome. like, you know, or birds and other such things. The Kutzner Marach points out here that one may not go and create shapes with the dough that you're baking, right? You can braid a challah, or you can, you know, make a, you know, whatever it is that you're baking, but you should not intentionally go and put it into a pan or a form that will afterward get a shape, because that is similar to writing, which is prohibited on Yontov. Sif Chaf Dalet. Asur l'mareach shum davar b'yontov. One may not smooth out. We've spoken about this malacha. Smoothing is one of the 39 malachos, and one may not smooth out on Yom Tov, just like Shabbos. And therefore, says the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, v'lachein, asur l'chameim ner shel sha'ava o shel chelev, it is forbidden to heat or warm a wax or tallow candle, l'dabko b'menorah o b'kotel, to stick it into a candelabra or onto the wall. Right? Certainly those that use candles, perhaps Hanukkah, perhaps Shabbos, so you know that if the candle is wiggling, it's not, you know, sort of staying well, so you heat the wax on the bottom of the candle, and then you sort of set it down firmly, and when the wax dries or cools, then the candle will be firmly affixed. Common practice. On Yom Tov it is forbidden, because the act of doing that is in fact the act of smoothing down the wax on the bottom of the candle, or the tallow, if a tallow or a fat candle, don't think those are in use anymore, but they used to be, and that is of course prohibited. Shema yimareich, perhaps that one will smooth down the wax, which is prohibited. V'im hashvofer es memuleis b'chelev, right? And if the opening or the aperture of your candelabra, right, let's say you have a fat lantern, right, and you know, the place where the wick comes out is you know, sort of filled with schmutz, with tallow, yachol and akosa b'davar, right, so one may clean it, she'ina mukta, because it is not mukta, right? Again, this is a halacha which we have a hard time relating to. We don't usually use lanterns now, but if, let's say, one has a lantern, right, or there certainly is the case on Yom Tov when one has to light candles for Yom Tov Sheni, and perhaps you want to clean something out or whatever, says the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, that's fine. You can clean it out because it is not mukta, because one may light candles. Sif Chaf Hei. Asur lechabos esh b'Yom Tov. It is prohibited to put out a fire on Yom Tov. V'afil ligrom kibui asur. And even to cause something to go out, it is forbidden. Lachain, therefore, asur lehamid ner dalik b'makom, it is forbidden to place a lit candle in a place sheyachol enashev haruach l'chaboso, where the wind can blow it out. Meaning, on Yom Tov, one may handle a lantern or a light. It's not like Shabbos, where of course candles are mukta, but on Yom Tov, right, so perhaps one has a candelabra, and, you know, you're holding it in your hand and walking down a darkened hallway, right, certainly I think that's how they used to do it in the old days. Well, that's a problem, because you can do that in a hallway, but you can't go outside with it, because the wind is going to blow and blow out your candles, and then you will have caused the candles to be blown out. V'afalpi she'ata eina ruach menashev, right, and says, the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, listen, you also can't place the candles in a place where the wind will blow it out the next time the wind blows up. Meaning right now it's still, that's fine, but if it, you know, you can't leave the candle in a place where it is vulnerable to the wind when it shall start. V'chein asur liftoach delas o chalon keneged haner adolek. And similarly, it is prohibited to open a door or a window right next to a lit candle, because it will cause it to be put out.
Sif Chaf Vav. Mutter lechasos es ha'esh b'chli o b'efer mukhan. One may cover the fire with a utensil or with ash that is already prepared. Ve'afal pi she'efshar she'echabek tas ayedeh kisui. Even though it is possible that some of the fire will go out, it will slightly be extinguished by covering it. Mikol makom, nonetheless, kevan she'ina mechaven lekibui, since you are not intending to extinguish the fire, (parentheses) v'gam havei melacha she'ina tzrich legufa, and also
the act of extinguishing in this case is a melacha that does not accomplish its intended consequence, mutter l'tzorech yom tov, it is permissible or permitted for the needs of yom tov. V'davka l'tzorech oso yahayom, and is specifically only allowed for the needs of that day, aval l'tzorech halayla aser, but if you're doing it for the needs of the following night, which is halachically a new day, then it is prohibited. Deha halayla shayach liyom beis, because obviously the night it is associated with, it is claimed by the next day. A side note on melacha she'ena tzricha legufa, we know that a person is not allowed to do any sort of melacha, any one of the 39 categories of labor that are prohibited on Shabbos, and many of them are also prohibited on Yom Tov, almost all of them in fact. But the concept of a melacha she'ena tzricha legufa, a melacha which does not accomplish its intended circumstance or its intended purpose, is as follows. It is considered by the rabbis to be a lower category of melacha. For example, there is a melacha that's called plowing. One may not plow. Certainly digging a pit is derivative of the melacha of plowing. Now let's say a person just needs the dirt. You go and say, listen, oh my gosh, I need a bag of dirt. Let's say I'm filling a sandbag for who knows what reason. So that would be a melacha she'ena tzricha legufa. I'm digging a pit, but that pit is inadvertent. It's basically of no concern because my intention is to dig in order to take the sand. Same thing is true here. The melacha of extinguishing is in fact in order to create coal. That's the way the melacha of extinguishing is defined. It's the creation of coal. It's the creation of things that I need after the fire is extinguished. And so here, if any inadvertent extinguishing happens, it is not it is not done in the same manner as the melacha of extinguishing, and so therefore it's yet another facet why the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch permits it. Se'if Chaf Zayin, Ein Mag'ilin Ve'ein Melabzin Kevin. One does not perform hag'ala, which is a kashering procedure, and nor does one perform libun, which is another kashering procedure, on Yom Tov. Right? Hag'ala is now obviously the full terms, the full halachic explanations for the kashering of utensils, the rendering them kosher after they've been rendered not kosher by forbidden use. That is a much deeper topic and should be seen, in its own place. However, the procedures of agala, or boiling up, sticking something in a boiling vat, or libun, which means heating it till it is white hot, usually with a blowtorch or some form of direct fire, both those things are prohibited on Yom Tov. Shene Esru, right? Ein Melabim Kalim Shene Esru. One may not go and kasher utensils that have been rendered prohibited or forbidden because they got trafed up, as they say. V'din tevilas kelim, and the laws of immersing a utensil, ayin la'el, so simon lamed zayin, one should see previously simon lamed zayin. Okay, if chafches, din hadachas kelim b'yom tov. The laws of washing utensils on Yom Tov. Kmo b'Shabbos, it is the same as Shabbos. V'asur lahadichan miyom tov rishon leyom tov sheni. But it is forbidden to wash utensils, wash the dishes, as it were, from Yom Tov rishon to Yom Tov sheni. Meaning that on Yom Tov, we know, especially when there are 2 days Yom Tov, right? One has the second day of Yom Tov in Chutz La'aretz. So, you have your Yom Tov meals, and so naturally there's a sink full of dishes. On Yom Tov day, sort of in the afternoon, so one may not engage in a cleanup in anticipation of that night going and performing, more Yom Tov festivities. Because that is preparation from one day to the next, and that is, of course, beneath the honor of Yom Tov, and is considered a desecration and is forbidden. So one may wash dishes same as one washes on Shabbos, right? Using, one should be cautious for to make sure that regular sponges are not used because they involve the use of schita, of wringing something out, and all sorts of manners. But basically, you can rest assured The same way that you wash dishes on Shabbos, assuming it's a permitted fashion, so too you can do it on Yom Tov, but you must make sure not to do it in a preparatory fashion. Seif Chaf Tes. Asur lehasik kedei lechamem es habayis. One may not turn the heat on, right? Or in the case of a wood stove, one may not load a wood stove with fuel in order to heat the house. Right? We said that you know, burning or lighting fires is permissible for cooking or for illumination, but heating does not fall into this category. Ela ima kor gadol, unless the cold is great. Meaning the issue here is that a person may only violate, or should I say, may only make use of the malacha of igniting, of burning things on Yom Tov, if it is the kind of thing which is for ochel nefesh, if it is something which is evenly practiced by or evenly enjoyed by everyone, such as food. And in the case of heating the house, it is not necessarily the case. However, if it is, the cold is great, shamacholim nikrashim, where the food is actually freezing or solidifying, v'havei tzorech ochel nefesh, and it's for the need of ochel nefesh, meaning you have to heat the house so that people will be able to eat, so then it is permissible. Aval imena kor gadol, but if it is not a great cold, meaning that the cold is not so great, the temperature is not so low, asur, it is forbidden. Rak al yidei goy mutar. However, it is permitted by employing the use of a non-Jew, by employing the contracting out to a non-Jew. And this was the frequent case, in climates where one needed heating very frequently, and a wood stove does not necessarily last all through Shabbos if one stocked it beforehand. So these arrangements did exist whereby non-Jews would be paid to go into a Jew's house and stock up their stove, and that would be something which was permitted. Obviously, all things that involve having a non-Jew perform malacha for you on Shabbos or Yom Tov should be clear to the halachic authority, because the laws are pretty complex. Sif Lamed, the final sif for this year. Mutter lechamem mayim. It is permissible to boil water. Lerchot yadav, right? Meaning you can heat water even just to wash your hands. Aval lo kol gufo, but not your entire body. Meaning, heating water on Yom Tov is tantamount to cooking. Now, we said the cooking is permissible, but cooking is not permissible carte blanche. I can't do whatever I want with it, as we've seen earlier, that I can't necessarily light a wood stove. But I may heat water in order to wash my hands. I may not heat water in order to take a shower, meaning to wash your entire body. Ulitzorech tinok, im tzrich nerechzo. But for the necessity, or should I say, for the need of a baby or a child, if one needs to bathe them, asur gam ken lechamemayim b'shvilo afilu l'yedei goy. It is forbidden to boil water for the bathing of a child, even with a non-Jew, meaning even by a proxy of a non-Jew. Ach yecholim harbos b'shvilo, but one may add for him. Dehainu, meaning shetzrichin ksas mayim lebishul, when you need some water in order for cooking, muter lechama afilu yore gedola, you can cook even a large pot. Rak sheitin kol hamayim kodem shemida ha'esh, just make sure that you fill up all the water before you place the pot on the fire. V'lo yosif acharkach, and do not add afterwards. So the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch says that one may not heat up water for bathing an entire body, even a child. Let's say the child, is all dirty and you need to bathe him. You may not boil water for bathing a child on Yom Tov. However, what you could do is sort of, take the back door. You could go and heat water ostensibly for cooking, meaning you boil water for a cup of coffee, and you can boil as much water as you need, and much more than you need for your coffee, so that you can use the rest for bathing. Right? Meaning you have to have it ostensibly for cooking, for food, for consumption, and the rest you can use for the bathing purposes that you need, and you can even, sort of decide that you want to boil a whole pot of water just for your coffee. However, question of the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, make sure that all the water is in the pot that you're boiling before you place it on the fire. You may not add to that water. Right? And there's the last line here, V'imatina kolektas, but if the baby, if the child is a little bit ill, mutar l'cham b'shvila yedei goy, then one is allowed to have a non-Jewish proxy go and boil water straight for the bathing, right? Let's say, you know, the child is taken ill, chas shalom, and one, you know, desires to bathe them in warm water, obviously not in cold water, because that could be disadvantageous to the child's health. That is permitted. You may do that, you know, straight away. You don't have to pretend it's for cooking, or, you know, use some of it for cooking and, you know, leave the rest for bathing. You can use all of it for bathing, provided that you perform this by a non-Jewish proxy. You have a non-Jew do it, because the needs of someone who is slightly ill, even if they're not, you know, gravely ill, chas v'shalom, even if they're only slightly ill, there is a leniency, and the rabbi is permitted certain acts to be done, such as having a non-Jewish proxy perform this malacha for you, perform the boiling of water. That concludes Sif Lamed, and that concludes part 3 of Hilchos Yom Tov. Stay tuned for part 4, the final shir for Tzimun Tzadi Ches.